From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on March 1st. That's the National Spread the Word to End the Word Day. The word in this case is retard or retarded. This initiative was launched in 2009 as a kind of grassroots effort by a small group of students, and it's now an ongoing effort by Special Olympics and Best Buddies, and frankly, people like you and me across the country. And yes, this kind of language is still used to demean people with intellectual disabilities. Unfortunately, we could point to a wide range of examples just in the last year. Here's a prominent one, though. During a Showtime television special, comedian Gary Owen talked about his cousin Tina. He referred to her repeatedly using the R word, and the story he told in an attempt to be funny was so demeaning and insulting, we've decided we can't even play a clip of it here. But trust me when I say, it was disgusting. And there was a pretty immediate outrage in that case. Showtime published a letter defending comedians and their right to free expression. But various groups simply asked for a meeting with Gary Owen to talk about his use of language and to discuss why it can hurt. It took a lot of back and forth, but finally that meeting happened. And it wasn't about shutting down free speech. It was about having a dialogue regarding what certain words can do. So let's talk about that. This conversation this hour is part of WXXI's Inclusion Desk, spotlighting issues related to disabilities. The WXXI Inclusion Desk is part of Move to Include, a partnership to encourage thoughtful discussion about issues of inclusion and the differently abled. My guests for the hour include Ann Costello, director of the Golisano Foundation. Ann, welcome back.
Thank you, Dan.
Martha Mock is here, director of the Institute of Innovative Transition at the University of Rochester. Martha, welcome to you.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Nancy Bodder's here, president of the Nazareth College chapter of Best Buddies. And if you don't know Best Buddies, Nancy's going to tell us all about that. Welcome to you.
Welcome. Thank you.
And Jessica Gill is a buddy officer for the Nazareth College chapter of Best Buddies. Jessica, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have all of you here. And I kind of just want to start by, I see the phone ringing already, which is great. You went in on a number of different issues on this. That's great. I want to start by reading an email I got this morning from a listener named Alan. Alan, I'm going to read this, and then I've got a few things I want to say, and I think our panel will probably want to respond as well. Alan writes, Evan, I'm a free speech guy, and I have to admit that whenever this subject comes up every year, it annoys me. I don't want anyone to be offended, but I also don't want people telling me what I can and cannot say. And to be honest, I don't even hear of people using this kind of language anymore. That's from Alan. I would direct you, Alan, to Warren, Michigan, the third largest city in that state. Right now, the mayor of Warren, Jim Fouts, is dealing with calls for him to resign. That's because audio recordings surfaced in recent weeks on which he makes derogatory remarks about a number of different people. And included in those remarks, a voice on the tape, again, sounds a lot like the mayor, disparages people with mental disabilities. And this is not easy to hear, but here's what he said on that tape. He called them, quote, retards, and later said that they are, quote, not even human beings. So, Alan, this illustrates how pervasive this kind of language still is. Now, Mayor Fouts has claimed that somehow the tapes were doctored. It wasn't him saying these things, but many people have asked for his resignation, saying if that's how he thinks about his fellow citizens, he's not fit to hold office. Yes, unfortunately, people still use this kind of language. I don't think this is about making it illegal to say certain words. Ann Costello, what's it about to you?
Well, thanks, Evan, for having us again.
Sure.
We really appreciate you helping us kick off the spread the word to end the word. Unfortunately, this word, the R word, has found its word into popular language in the vernacular. And to millions of Americans and other people around the world, it is hurtful and demeaning. And, you know, for me, it's about basic humanity and kindness. Let's start there before we even can get into conversations about free speech. It hurts people with intellectual disabilities.
Okay.
And it brings up stigmas and negative stereotypes.
Martha, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I think I certainly agree with everything that Anne has said, as well as thinking about the impact that language has. So I think that's one of the most important things when thinking about this word and many others in terms of what they continue to perpetuate, which are, you know, untruths and myths about people with intellectual disabilities and the value in our society and what we need to be thinking about.
Nancy Bodder?
I think that when we use that word, we kind of demean them as people. You know, we don't see them on the same playing field in society, which unfortunately, that's what the word, like, causes.
Well, let me ask Jessica Gill, again, she's a buddy officer for Nazareth College's chapter of Best Buddies, to tell us a little bit about your own background and your own story. So, Jessica, first of all, You know, I've been told that occasionally in your life you've been bullied. Is that true?
Yes.
What's happened?
Some of the guys in middle school and high school who had called me the R word, and I avoided them because it hurt my feeling and it made me want to cry.
All right. So you still remember that, and
yeah.
Hopefully not most people in your life, I imagine. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about what you do at Best Buddies. I don't think most people know what it is. So, Nancy, do you want to start? And then we'll have Jessica tell us, too.
Yeah, sure.
So what's Best Buddies?
So Best Buddies is an inclusive international organization, and it's actually all around the world. And Nazareth College has opened up the second chapter in Rochester next to RIT. And we promote one-to-one friendships. So what happens is we get students from Nazareth College that get paired with a buddy who has an intellectual disability. And they have to text or call twice a week and hang out twice a month.
Okay. What's it mean to you?
I think it's great. It definitely promotes inclusion. And people like try to think it's like volunteering, but really it's just like making new friendships and making new connections in your life. And you can get a lot of experiences. And I just think it's promoting that inclusive friendships.
Well, Jessica, can you talk about your Best Buddies experience? What's your role?
I am Best Buddy Officer. I represent the buddies and life prep student for our board. I have a buddy who goes shopping with me, eat lunch with, go bowling, go to the movie, and just hang out.
Okay. By the way, Jessica, do you like to go bowling?
Yeah, I do.
What's your favorite thing to do?
Play the games.
Okay. All right. Very good. And, can you tell us why you think, for people who are listening right now, Jessica, why people should stop using the R word?
It's offensive and selfish. We should stop it.
That's an interesting word to use, by the way. Selfish is an interesting word there because, again, if you take it out of the context of free speech, again, no one is saying it should be against the law to use this word.
Yeah.
But if you know that it hurts people and you're going to use it anyway, Martha, is that selfish?
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I would agree with
really
what
Jessica's... That's an insightful way to describe it, isn't it?
It is. It is, because it does have an impact on people, and when people are choosing to use it, they know that it's going to have an impact, oftentimes. Sometimes people are using it because they're repeating something they've heard, and they don't necessarily know, right? So then it's our job to let them know.
In a second, we're going to go over some events that are coming up here, March 1st, 2nd, 3rd. Again, March 1st is National Spread the Word to End the Word Day, but before we do that, let me grab a phone call. Bruce in Irondequoit is first up on the phones. Go ahead, Bruce. Hey there, Bruce.
I'm still here. Hello.
Oh, there you are. Go ahead, sir.
All righty. I agree completely that in all of our legal communications and everything like that, that the word should be taken out. And in interpersonal communications between, you know, people that have disabilities or not, it should be taken out. But there are times when, in a pejorative type of way, you need to say something, and those are generally not meant to be good. And in that context, I don't see that people lump that together with this. If you say it to any person, it's an issue against people who have disabilities. And I don't see that. You're using it as a pejorative. It's meant to be that, and it's not intended to hurt anybody who has any disability. So I agree completely that it, in the realm of that, that it should be taboo. But there's a lot of other words that are pejorative, and the N-word included, that, you know, when used in a specific context, are not wrong. It's not the word, it's the intent.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out, what's the context where it's not wrong to use the R-word then?
If you're trying to insult somebody. If the intent is to insult, it's an insulting word.
Okay.
But you may say you should never insult anybody, but I've been in situations where it is absolutely, in my mind, appropriate to insult them and to suggest that maybe they're of diminished mind,
okay,
and saying that to them would be lost on them.
Okay. So
are you of diminished capacity? What are you thinking?
Okay.
It's not going to resonate the same way.
All right. But are you also suggesting that there are times to use this word in a medical setting or in a non-insulting?
No, that's absolutely incorrect. That's just not even appropriate in today's society. To say it to a person that has it, that, you know, unless they did something else you wanted to insult them for, it would be absolutely wrong. It's not a proper usage of any type of word. It just doesn't hold a good meaning in any kind of medical or informative type of situation. It just doesn't really reflect the current understanding of those types of issues.
Okay. Well, Bruce, thanks for the phone. I'm sorry, Bruce. Thanks for the phone call. We got a lot to get to, but I want to hit this in a couple of different ways here because, again, I know that there in the past when we've talked about this, some people have said, well, what about the medical terminology, mental retardation, that kind of a thing? There's been some evolution on that, right, Martha? Ann, is that right?
Absolutely. We've come a long way from the terms that were used at the turn of the century, which were even worse than mental retardation, but technically and legally, we have dropped mental retardation from the medical terminology, and now it's intellectually and developmentally disabled.
Yeah. Does this go back also to Rose's Law?
Yes.
Okay. So let me just read this because our outstanding producer, Megan Mack, has some great notes on this. So thanks to Megan for this. Rose's Law, October 5th, 2010, President Barack Obama signed a bill into federal law known as Rose's Law. It takes its name and inspiration for 9-year-old Rosa Marcelino, a 9-year-old at the time, of course, of Maryland. It removes the terms mental retardation and mentally retarded from federal health, education, and labor policy and replaces them with people first language, individual with an intellectual disability and intellectual disability. And Rosa Marcelino has Down syndrome. So there's a little bit of context there. But Bruce also wasn't saying, you know, people use it in the medical context. In fact, he was saying the opposite. He thinks there are times it should be used as an insult to someone who does not have a mental disability when you want to use it to hurt somebody. And Bruce, I appreciate the call. I cannot disagree more with that. I'm very confused about why we want to, you know, kind of drop to that level. And I know you can be frustrated with people at times, but Nancy, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, actually, my friend Jess and I created a list of other words to use instead of the word retard. Would you like to see that list, Jess?
Yeah. Stupid, weird, dumb, awkward, strange, annoying, boring, ugly, uncalled for, uncool, dull, pointless, crazy, and many more.
And that is, if you must,
if you must.
Really feel like you've got to use a verbal cudgel, that list is still better.
Yeah.
But I hope that we can learn to all communicate better and not go to that. I guess that's just
Well, I'd like to add some to that list and say we could call people with intellectual disabilities our friend, our neighbor, a student, an athlete, a human being. And on, and others, right?
Citizen.
Jessica, right.
Yeah, taxpayer, right. All kinds of things. You know,
we talk about first people first language, so a person with a developmental disability, not you're developmentally disabled. So we try to be respectful. You know, and the caller talked about they don't intend to hurt their feelings or to cause any pain. I think that is so key. The fact that it does cause pain and hurt to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, who are we without it to say, you know, toughen up, buck up, you're too sensitive. I don't have a developmental disability, so who am I to say you shouldn't be offended by the word? They are. People with intellectual disabilities are offended by the word.
You're hearing Ann Costello from the Golisano Foundation, and you might have heard Tom Golisano himself. In fact, we've got a clip of a PSA that we can listen to that helps commemorate the upcoming Spread the Word to End the Word Day. This is from that PSA.
The word retarded is hurtful to millions of people with intellectual disabilities. The R word is cruel and offensive. It's time to spread the word to end the word retarded. It's time to treat all people with kindness and promote the new R word. Respect. Join the Golisano Foundation in the Special Olympics to end the use of the word retarded. Go to the website r-word.org to take the pledge. Thank you.
So as we get ready to talk about not only taking the pledge, but events that are coming up, here's a couple of other statistics that Megan Mack pulled that I think really should be heard. Up to 3% of the world's population have intellectual disabilities. That is almost 200 million people around the world. It's one of the largest disability populations in the world. So, yeah, I can't believe that anybody listening now doesn't know someone. 200 million people. And Special Olympics multinational public opinion study of attitudes toward people with intellectual disabilities conducted by Gallup reveals that throughout the world, more than 60% of people still believe that people with intellectual disabilities should be segregated in schools and in the workplace. More than 60%. Think about that. Segregate our schools and workplaces. You know, Martha Mock is here from the Institute of Innovative Transition at the University of Rochester. And I'd love for you to tell me how you feel about when you hear, you know, more than 6 in 10 people in this world think we should still segregate in that way. What do you think?
Well, first of all, it leaves me with a feeling of we have a lot more work to do in this area in terms of thinking about educating people about the rights of people with all disabilities to live, to work, and be in the community, which is essential. It's disheartening. It's disheartening to hear in terms of thinking about those numbers. I think that, and I had a conversation a couple years ago, actually, with Simi Linton, who is a very well-known disability advocate, and she and I were talking about how do you know that you've made progress? Because the progress feels slow. And we talked about, you know, looking at it by decades in terms of thinking about, you know, what has been achieved in this decade is going to be so meaningful as it relates to employment, as it relates to inclusion at college, right? In terms of thinking about Nazareth College and University of Rochester and others that are doing that. And I think that when we look at it, you know, from that standpoint, then we are making progress, but it certainly is incremental and we can be making a lot more.
Employment rates, I assume, are still a big challenge.
They are. And they still hover, especially for people with intellectual disabilities, around 18%.
So 18%. And Martha, my mind, here's where my mind goes. I read that number, again, a Gallup number, more than 6 in 10 people think we should still be segregating our workplaces and our schools. Mm-hmm. How many executives, how many people in HR, how many people who are in charge of hiring for companies believe that? And if you believe that, how many people with intellectual disabilities have a chance?
That's right.
That's a logical thing to worry about, isn't it?
It is. It's a very logical assumption to make and to think about. And that's one of the things I think that also that this campaign does is raise awareness as it relates to, you know, understanding intellectual disability and where we need to be in our society, where some folks are in terms of working and going to college, but then expanding that. Okay. Because we need, you know, if some folks say, well, what can I do in addition to, you know, taking the pledge is, you know, give somebody a chance who you know, or a second chance if they're coming to apply for a job.
And are you disheartened when you see a survey like that?
Oh, I'm very disheartened. When I think about the slow progress, you think about Tom, who has been at this not his whole life since his son Stephen was born, as well as the foundation now for 30 years. And think about the Kennedy Shrivers, who founded Special Olympics 50 years ago, as well as Best Buddies, I believe, 20 or some odd years. What I like that's happening at Special Olympics and Best Buddies now is this challenge to younger folks to become the first unified generation. That's why we have the buddy pair here today. That's why Nancy, who's a future special ed teacher, sees the value in becoming friends with Jess so that when she's a teacher, she will see people with intellectual disabilities as friends and students and colleagues first before someone with a challenge. So when you think about a unified generation, inclusion, again, we have a long way to go, but I think it's the right message and the right push. And I see Jess and Nancy nodding over there, so that's great.
Jessica, can I ask you a question about, do you want to work in the future? Do you think about jobs? Do you like working?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Why do you like working?
You make money and want to work for work experience.
Okay. Have you thought about what you like to do or what you
like? Full service at Wegmans.
Full service at Wegmans, okay. And forgive me, have you done that? Have you been at Wegmans? Have you worked at Wegmans?
No.
Okay. That's something you want to do? And Nancy, you want to jump in there? Go ahead.
Yeah. At Life Prep, Jessica's program at Nazareth College, they do a vocational placement every semester. And Jess, where are you at this semester?
Student Activity Leadership.
Yep. So she helps the higher-ups plan like the big student events on campus. And she's kind of like their right-hand gal there.
Yeah.
Seem to like that a lot, Jessica.
Yeah.
That's great.
What other vocational placements have you had, Jess?
I work at CFD department. Like, I could sort mail. the copy machine.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and other students, like, they might help out some sports teams. They might work in the dining hall.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other places, Jess?
Off campus.
Yeah, they go off campus.
So there's obviously a wide range that Jessica's already had an experience for. Mm-hmm. You can see what she wants to do. And then I think let's keep those numbers in mind. You know, just keep that in mind for the way that we can build a more inclusive world is deciding that we don't want to segregate. We've got to find a way to get those numbers down. I mean, it's 2017. I mean, I don't want to tell stories I've told on this program so many times, but I was a camp counselor, you know, almost 20 years ago when we were talking about why is Rotary Week separated? And then we stopped doing that. And I saw kids' lives change. The kids who did not have intellectual or physical disabilities, who rallied, who built friendships, who by the end of the week it was like, you know, this, you better not say a word about this person because these are my friends now. You know, I would not have thought the numbers are that high. Let's talk about what you can do with the pledge coming up here. So you heard Tom Golisano mention it in the PSA, but Ann Costello, again, from the Golisano Foundation. People want to take the pledge. Where can they do that?
They can do it online at r-word.org. You can also spread the word on social media through hashtag RockRespect or just hashtag Respect. You can follow the Golisano Foundation on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and there are many ways for you to be involved, but also help us spread the word. So spread this to your friends and families and businesses.
And there are some events coming up here, and somewhere in this entire tree that I've taken down just to prepare for the show, here it is, we've got some special. So March 1st, Mayor Lovely Warren of Rochester is going to hold a news conference and proclaim the day. End of the R-Word Day. That'll be at 10 a.m. at City Hall. And public invited to take the pledge anytime that day or otherwise, by the way, of course. March 2nd, there's a film screening of Diffability Hollywood with a panel discussion to follow at the Little Theater. So Little Theater, Theater 5, starting at 6 o'clock. It's free. The film's a documentary about Hollywood's portrayal of people with disabilities in films throughout history. And the film, by the way, is by a Rochester native, Adrian Esposito, who has Asperger's syndrome. He'll be on the panel. Jack Garner is going to be on the panel. So again, that's March 2nd, which is a Thursday. Diffability Hollywood at the Little Theater, 6 p.m. And Nancy Botter's got to tell us about what's coming up on March 3rd, Rochester's first inclusive fashion show hosted by Best Buddies Nazareth. What's coming up?
So the Life Hub students and other buddies of our chapter, including, I believe, Brighton, Pittsford, and a few other local schools who are Best Buddies chapters, are having models for the local prom shop, Jewels, I think it is. And so actually right after this interview, Jess and I are going to get her dress fitted. So Jess will be in the fashion show. And it's models who do have disabilities and who don't have disabilities. And we're really excited for it. It's the first one ever.
Okay. A lot of work gone into that?
Oh, yeah. Every day.
All right. And so, best case scenario, what happens on that day for you?
Just everybody gets to see that there really is no difference, you know, just because someone may struggle with something or may pertain a label, that they see that just beautiful girls and guys and their tuxes and dresses and just a really good time.
Jessica, so. Are you excited?
Yes, I'm in.
Very good. Martha Mock, am I missing anything on events? What else is coming up?
So we have a few events that are going on at the University of Rochester, both on the River Campus as well as over at the Medical Center. At the River Campus, we have our Special Olympics chapter along with People First Initiative, which are two student groups, along with our tour students, which is similar to Life Prep at NAS, who are actually working for a whole week to man a table at Wilson Commons there. So if you're in and around Wilson Commons, feel free to stop by, sign the pledge there online. On March 1st itself, we will have three different performance groups. Vocal Point, which is an a cappella group, No Jackets Required, and the Exclusive Step Team, which will be performing that day in celebration. Over at the Medical Center, there's going to be an art show at the cafeteria there at the Medical Center. And then Eastman Dental is going to be tabling, as well as the Complex Care Center right down here on Culver. So that folks can, you know, we can get as many signatures as we can and raise awareness.
If only you'd collected a place online where people can see, like, a menu of events coming up here.
There is on the Golisano website.
I know, I teed you up.
Yeah. And this year, you know, when I think about it, Evan, we've been at this now 7 years, and we started primarily with the University of Rochester, who right from the get-go was a big supporter of this effort. We have over 50 organizations and institutions now joining us publicly this year. There may be others that we don't know about. The good news in that 50 is so many more of our public high schools, our Catholic high schools, and our colleges and universities. Again, unified generation, the young people who are challenging the world to look at people with differences differently and to build inclusive societies. So this is just a really exciting campaign this year that so many are joining us, and we thank them all.
We're going to get our only break of the hour. Mike, who sent me an email, I'm going to read your email when we come back. It's an interesting idea about the way language can evolve. And I'm not sure we're there yet with the R word, but Mike's got a question about that. I'll read his email. Got a couple of other emails to read as well. You want to call the program? It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're also going to talk about, you know, sort of how to deal with that kind of language when you hear it. I thought there have been a number of places recently where people have written about if you encounter racism, if you're at a family dinner and someone is saying things that are racist or misogynistic, do you confront them, even if gently? Or do you, you know, is it hard to do that? Do you just kind of back up and say, okay, I'm not going to say anything. It's going to be uncomfortable. Well, what about when you hear people using this term? You know, I mean, I'd love to hear what Nancy Botter says about that and the rest of our panel. So we'll talk about the etiquette of addressing this when you hear the R word in the wild, as they say. And we'll continue the discussion with our guests. You heard Ann Costello, director of the Golisano Foundation, Martha Mock, director of the Institute of Innovative Transition at the University of Rochester, Nancy Botter, president of the Nazareth College chapter of Best Buddies, and Jessica Gill, who is a buddy officer for the Nazareth College chapter. We continue in just a moment. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections. In our first hour, we follow up on the reporting from WROC-TV's Adam Chodak on heroin in our community, and specifically the availability of needles, what that does for addicts, but also to communities. What should the proper protocol be? Then in our second hour, what does it really mean to be a CSA? Are you a member? What you can know about local CSAs. Talk to you Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. When I was growing up, and probably still today, but certainly when I was growing up, if you wanted to say something that you didn't like, a pejorative that you often heard kids use was gay. I'm sure kids still use that. You know, it takes a while for language to evolve. But there, in some ways, that has evolved. I've got gay friends. That's not a pejorative. I've got gay friends. They're awesome. And Mike sends an email on this same line wondering if the R word can eventually have a different connotation. And he says, I feel like a lot of the times the word now, the R word, is now actually used in a more positive light. For example, did you see that LeBron James dunk last night? It was retarded. So Mike is at least trying to identify. Now, Ann's going like, people say that. I know kids do use that in that context. I know. And we're not here to necessarily endorse it. But Mike, I think the email comes from a good place here that says, I mean, Nancy, as the youngest on the panel, do you hear people use it in that context once in a while that Mike is talking about?
I don't think I've ever heard it used in a positive.
I have. Okay. So bottom line is Mike's wondering if eventually it can evolve. Martha, can we hope that it could evolve that way, or do you feel like we're a long way from that?
So as you read that, I was reminded of an incident at my daughter's middle school where I overheard it used in a way basically to equate, you know, to the word awesome.
Okay.
In terms of thinking about something that was done. But I think one of the things that we talk about in our family, and we talk about certainly with our students, is use the word awesome.
Yeah.
And versus, sort of co-opting a word. In terms of thinking about that.
Okay. Mike, I think your email really does come from a good place. And we can hope that eventually the sting leaves certain words and goes in different directions. I personally think Martha's advice is good there, but, you know, interesting nonetheless. And I appreciate that. I want to grab a phone call from Avon. This is Susan on the phone. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. I'm actually in the car, but that's where I live.
Okay.
But it's all right.
Hands on the wheel.
Hands on the wheel, I'm
go.
All safe. Yes, I have worked with people with special needs, with developmental disabilities for a long, long time. And I also work at Jiva Theater Center in the summertime. I teach kids, teenagers, young students with you know, no special needs because we don't have the means to do that there. However, what I'm thinking is, and I met Anne a long time ago.
Hi, Susan.
You probably don't remember me, Anne.
That's unfair, Susan. It's been, she can't even see you.
I know.
But go ahead. I know, but it's okay. I mean, I understand that. But what I'm interested in now is working with theaters, including Jiva, including Blackfriars, to write plays that have, you know, characters with special needs. I was the assistant director on Over the Tavern at Jiva years and years ago, where we actually cast a young man with Down syndrome in a play, in a character, oh, shock, who had Down syndrome, you know. So, but I think that so many of these folks just don't know how to do it. And I would just love to see more plays written that include the characters in an integrated environment. What do you guys think?
Well, Susan, I couldn't agree with you more. And let me first answer or respond by hoping that you'll come to the showing of Diffability Hollywood next week at the Little Theater by Adrianus, because the conversation in the movie, as well as afterwards, we're having a panel discussion, is lack of people with disabilities portrayed, as well as when they are portrayed, 90-some percent are portrayed by actors who do not have disabilities, but they play people with disabilities. So I think you could certainly add to that conversation, and the topic is exactly what you're expressing here on the show.
Yes, yes. And I think that we just, I don't know.
And when you think about, I don't know how many opportunities you've had to see any of the Move to Include shows on WXXI in partnership with the Golisano Foundation. Again, trying to do exactly what you're saying, portray talents and abilities of people with all kinds of disabilities.
Susan, thank you for the phone call. And let me just add, you know, Anne said 90% in the notes that producer Megan Mack put together, representation in the media. The Ruderman Family Foundation, last year, they found 95% of characters with disabilities are played by able-bodied actors. According to their research, GLAAD reported that fewer than 2% of scripted television characters have a disability. I mean, any disability. That is obviously that's not really representative of the population. And just tell me a little bit more about why we should be bothered by, if it's 90 or 95% of characters who, if it's a character with a disability and they're played by an able-bodied actor, why should we be bothered by that?
Well, I think it has to do with equality, with their rights, with opportunity. Again, if they are capable of portraying or being an actor, I'm not suggesting, just like we think about that in terms of employment. But why wouldn't you want someone who has lived the experience and who can be the spokesperson and the authentic portrayal of a certain condition to be the person with a disability? Just like anytime you or I are called upon to do our jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Speechless on ABC, right, Meg? Is that right? Is a perfect example.
And Born This Way. Now there's the show on cable.
Martha, thoughts on that? You agree? Just about more opportunity?
I do. And actually, on the Special Olympics website, there is a, it's called Intellectual Disabilities Picture This. It's actually a guide for the entertainment industry in terms of thinking about, what you need to be thinking about related to portraying folks with disabilities, as well as thinking about how to engage people. There certainly are some local theater companies that do Cobblestone. I know that there's some others in the areas, Hochstein as well, where folks, with and without disabilities are acting together, which I think is certainly the goal.
Shout out to Aspie Works and the great Justin Riley. There's a lot of people in this community, so no doubt about that. I had mentioned before the break here that I wanted to ask about etiquette. And so, you know, I think Nancy Botter, who's president of the Nazareth College chapter of Best Buddies, and I think you're a good person to ask this. If you hear a friend use that term, use the R word, for example, you know, or if you're at a family dinner, there are moments that it's kind of hard to, you know, it's someone you respect, someone you love, but it can be hard to call it out. In the same way, when you hear somebody say something that might shock you, a political statement, a racist statement, a sexist statement, you hear the R word. What do you do about it?
I kind of have like a one encounter rule. Like if I meet like a friend of a friend and I hear it, I might not say much, might act a little like not say anything at all really. But then when I hear it from like family, which my family doesn't even say it anymore over the years, and friends, I really just, I don't make a huge deal about it, but I say, hey, you know, there's plenty of other words that you can use. There's no reason to use that exact word at this moment.
Okay. Even if it's awkward. But the better you know somebody, the more likely you are to say something.
And a lot of, like, some of my friends that have used that word so much in high school, they, every time they accidentally say it or, you know, think about it, they're like, oh, sorry, Nancy. And I'm like, you don't have to say sorry to me, but at least, like, really stop trying to use it. But they're making an effort to, at least.
Sure. Martha Mock, what do you think?
I think so it is uncomfortable whenever we're in, you know, at family dinners or in other situations. The more you know someone, certainly the easier it is to bring something like that up. But I feel like, you know, there's certainly ways to do it that that can, you know, have an impact and not shut down the conversation in terms of thinking about posing questions. That's oftentimes, well, you know, what do you really mean by that? What are you talking about? In terms of posing a question rather than, you know, telling someone specifically not to use it. But then you wait a couple minutes and then you tell them not to use it.
Anne?
I think the reality is, even though some think and some hope that we won't hear that word in society and in conversation, we do. And that's why we have this campaign. So I think we all need to be prepared for our response. Again, it is uncomfortable. I like the one encounter rule. But I like to look at this.
The what rule?
Nancy was talking about
the one encounter rule. Gotcha.
Right. I mean, there is a time and a place. But I think if you think about it as an opportunity to educate and engage in a way that you're comfortable and that is respectful, that you absolutely should take the opportunity and speak up.
All right, an email from Tim in West Bloomfield. He says, I've often wondered why we use the term ARC so often. You know, the Ark of Yates, Ark Monroe. You know, he says, what is the R for and when will that change? Got to start somewhere. So,
well, interesting, it has changed. It used to be ARC, the Association for Retarded Citizens. All cap letters. It was the acronym. Now it's the word ARC, capital A, lowercase RC. So it's an ARC umbrella of services.
So it doesn't stand for anything anymore,
no,
is what you're saying.
No, it's the ARC of service.
Does the history, though, I think Tim may be wondering, does the history lend us to think that we should scrap that name altogether then, come up with something else?
Perhaps. I mean, that's something for ARC of USA to discuss. Okay. And maybe they have, and they came up with the lowercase word first, but
yeah, I guess all part of the process. Richard does what Ann and Martha really wanted to do was inject politics into this. I'm being facetious, Ann, but he has a sincere question. He says, as much as I agree with your guests about the removal of this word, how does this square with this new American disgust with politically correct discourse? Does this pertain to the use of the word? I mean, I don't think it does, Richard. Here's why I don't think it does, and then I'll let the guest respond. Sometimes we use political correctness as this guise or this Trojan horse just to get in and say whatever bad things you want to say and then say, you know, I'm not being politically correct. You know, that's exactly what Carl Paladino said when he made the remarks about Michelle Obama and Barack Obama recently. This is not about being politically correct. But I understand what Richard is saying. Is the landscape a little coarser right now? Is the landscape lending more people to say, well, I can abandon PC and that you know, open the floodgates to say things maybe, you know, that we shouldn't say? And I hope not. I don't know the answer to that. Martha, are you concerned about that right now in this American moment?
In short, yes. But I think it's also, we've seen through, you know, many Americans' responses to some of that that coarse language, that folks are speaking out against it and are calling it what it is in terms of thinking specifically about use of certain language. I think that one of the things that I, when I talk about, you know, disability, when I talk about disability policy, when I talk about education, it's a bipartisan issue. And it is, you know, it is something that touches all of us, no matter what political affiliation, no matter, you know, whether you're living in the city, whether you're living in, you know, in a more rural setting. So I think, you know, thinking of disability as an aspect of diversity and not utilizing pejorative words at all as it relates to, you know, disability is just, you know, sort of a good rule of thumb.
Richard, I can tell you that I spoke to a school administrator last week in Western New York, I won't identify where, who said that he feels like any moment he could walk into school and there could be all kinds of terrible words spray painted on the wall, that some students have responded to recent events with more coarseness, more directness, and that, yes, occasionally they say, well, I don't have to be politically correct anymore. I think we have to separate political correctness, which is a thing, and sometimes is a thing that is not all that helpful, versus I just want an excuse to say bad things. And I think the R word goes in that second category. That's how I feel about that. But I appreciate the email, and I think it's a fair question. I want to ask Martha Mock about, you know, the national movement towards inclusion that I know has so much to do with the work that you're doing as the director of the Institute for Innovative Transition at the University of Rochester. You know, tell me about what you've seen in recent years and how that's going.
So one of the big areas that we work in is with colleges and with school districts and with adult agencies who are providing students with intellectual and other developmental disabilities access to college. So for many years, that was an arena that students with intellectual disabilities were not welcome in. And we are so fortunate in Western New York, and especially here in Rochester, to have so many colleges who are opening up their doors. Nationwide, there's about 250 colleges who are doing that. But of all the colleges across the nation, that's only 6%. So we still have a long way to go in terms of thinking about that. But, you know, places like Nazareth, places like University of Rochester, Roberts Wesleyan, Cuca College, St. John Fisher, you know, are engaging with students in meaningful ways, all, you know, towards the end of employment, in terms of thinking about employment as that end. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. And I want to read an email from Rebecca from Geneva that illustrates some of what we've been talking about towards inclusion, towards work settings, school settings that are more integrated, more inclusive, more celebrating differences and helping everybody. Here's what Rebecca writes. She says, I've been a supporter of the End the Word campaign for years, but last summer I had to take a moment to make sure my life and practice matched up to my ideals. My son entered kindergarten this school year, and he was placed in an inclusive classroom. This room has two teachers, a special ed kindergarten teacher and a special ed teacher, for students with disabilities to learn alongside their peers. My husband and I paused and had to ask more questions. I understood that this classroom would be beneficial for the children with special education needs, but I wondered if it was a good fit for general education needs. A teacher friend of the family told me that she was a fan, and more eyes were always better in the classroom. She also said that it gives children the opportunity to be leaders in the classroom, and they spend more time on social lessons, which all five-year-old kids need. Thank you. That's from Rebecca in Geneva. I think that is a really self-aware, kind of very self-reflective email. Rebecca, that's really, really great stuff. Because again, when it comes down to it, you have to practice it, especially when we talk about real inclusion. And one thing that I wondered, and I'm going to ask Nancy Botter, who's 20 years old, your thoughts on this. I wonder if it's more generational. You know, we read that statistic earlier. If you missed that, more than 60% of people still think schools and workplaces should be segregated based on disabilities, particularly intellectual disabilities. That's a lot. And to me, that's really troubling. I don't know if you broke it down by age group, if it would be less, but I feel like it. I feel like every generation's a little more inclusive, a little more tolerant. Maybe that's the idealist in me. What do you think, Nancy?
No, I think definitely it's a generational thing. I think it's getting better. I know that, so my mom's a teacher up in Watertown, and I'm hoping to be a teacher too. And just like in our classes that we take, we have to have lesson plans and then how to easily accommodate it for students with disabilities. So we're just really focused, we're prepared to have people that have disabilities in our classroom, whether we're going to do general ed or elementary, whatever we may do. So I think just like in college and high school, and I think the earlier kids are aware and put in inclusive environments like that classroom, the more accepting they're going to be. So,
what do you think of Rebecca's email?
I definitely agree with her. So
it's pretty cool. I mean, I say pretty cool. I mean, it's just good to see that.
Yeah.
We talk a lot on this program about learning about our world and understanding our world and how to sort of fit within it. And once in a while, I hear from what I would call curmudgeonly liberals who are concerned that their fellow progressives drive a Prius and that is good enough to help save the planet and don't really do anything else, you know. And Rebecca is the kind of person who's self-reflective and says, I've been taking the pledge to end the R word, but what am I going to do in practice? And you had a big smile on your face as I read that story. What would you say to Rebecca?
Well, I appreciate her comments, and I appreciate the fact that she, her son is in an inclusive classroom. So thank you, Geneva School District. You know, that's the big question. What do we do after we take the pledge? What do we do with Move to Include? We've been raising awareness and educating, but we want to move into action. And action starts with every one of us. We all have neighbors, friends, family. We have a buddy system here right across the table from us. That's a wonderful example. Jess talked about they go bowling together. They go out for coffee together. Any one of us could do that with our friends who have special challenges. It doesn't take a lot. It doesn't cost a lot. And it's called friendship. It's called humanity. It's called one-on-one. It's what we all want in life.
Did you want to weigh in on that as well?
Yeah. Hey, Jess, do you want to talk about what inclusion means to you and how does it feel to be included?
It feels like you could fit in and that you are a part of something.
Everybody wants to be a part of something. We all want to be included.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we get ready to wrap up the hour, I just want to remind you that the reason we're having this conversation is March 1st is Spread the Word to End the Word Day. There's a number of events coming up. I'll hit those in just a second again. But if you missed the earlier part of the hour, by now you've probably heard of the campaign to end the R word. It goes back to 2009, so we're coming up on a decade, the ninth year of this campaign. And what's a reasonable expectation? I mean, do you set goals for how many people are taking the pledge and, you know, what you want to see come out of this?
You know, that's a good question. Nationally now, Special Olympics keeps a tally, and there have been 657,000 pledges to date. I'd like to challenge them over the next, 2 years to get to 1 million. So Let's issue that challenge.
Let's get going
in the Genesee region.
There's like 340 million people in this country.
That's
so
right.
We have a lot of options.
I know. That's right.
This region has been a big supporter.
We are
of this
the largest campaign of any region in the United States, and with 50 plus schools, agencies, and businesses promoting and supporting us this year, this is just tremendous.
I hate to give you a softball like this, but I'm going to do it. Because the last time I saw Tom Golisano, we had a great conversation, and Tom said, no softballs for me, please. And I said, okay, and we didn't do any softballs. But the Golisano Foundation and your work in this comes from a very personal place for him. I mean, it is a, yes. You can see how sincere it is with him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tom has a son with developmental disabilities who is in his 50s now. And you've heard me say publicly many times, Tom, when Stephen was born 50 years ago, it was a different day, a different world. And they struggled for services for his son. And he is all about helping other families and promoting awareness and inclusion. And one of the statements in the trust instrument when he founded the foundation was that we would help create a world of dignity and respect. And that's exactly what the R Word campaign is trying to do.
All right, so get online to take the pledge where, Ann?
At r-word.org.
r-word.org. And I'll read several of the events coming up here. So March 1st, Mayor Warren's going to have a news conference at 10 a.m. at City Hall proclaiming the day as End the R Word Day. And on March 2nd, a film screening, Diffability Hollywood, with a panel discussion that follows. It's free at the Little Theater. So that's on a Thursday night starting at 6 p.m. The film is by a Rochester native. That's Adrian Esposito, who has Asperger's Syndrome. He'll be on the panel along with Jack Garner. And the film's a documentary about Hollywood's portrayal of people with disabilities in film throughout history. So March 2nd, free, Little Theater, 6 p.m. March 3rd, Rochester's first inclusive fashion show hosted by Best Buddies Nazareth. That is 7 to 9 p.m., is that right?
Yep, in the Charlotte's Forum.
At Nazareth. Tickets are $10 and awesome. You've got models from Pittsford, Brighton School Districts, and Naz College. It's going to be a lot of fun there. You're going to be there. Jessica's going to be there.
Yep, Jessica's going to be in it.
Jess, you're going to be in it, so good luck to you. Have fun with that.
Thank you.
And Martha Mock, real quick, what else is coming up you want people to know about?
Thank you. We're having some events at the University of Rochester at the Medical Center, hosted by the AMDMD students there at the cafeteria, along with on River Campus. We're having events all week related specifically to signing the pledge and folks being able to do it there electronically. And thanks so much, Evan.
Well, thank you for being here, Martha. Anne, thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Our best regards to Tom. Thanks very much,
thank
Nancy.
You.
Good luck to you. You are going to be a teacher, and I suspect you're going to be a great one.
Thank
thanks
you.
For being here. Jessica, good luck to you
thank
as
you.
Well. And thanks for listening. Rob Braden, the engineer of this broadcast. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you Thursday on Member Supported Public Radio.